Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
Assalamu alaikum. You are out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. I am your host, Jihad Muhammad, from Atlanta, Georgia, tonight. Our topic, what is going on in the world of hip-hop, and what is the future of the hip-hop industry? Tonight, our guest is long-standing soldier and defender of truth, the Minister of Information, Professor Griff of the legendary conscious group Public Enemy is our guest tonight. In the second hour, from the Wedding Bliss Foundation and long-standing student minister of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Brother Jamil Muhammad is here tonight. Brother Jamil Muhammad is here tonight to talk about the foundation of the Wedding Bliss. He's also here to help discuss some of the talking points of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's powerful subject and timely message, The Time and What Must Be Done. Also, breaking news with Chief Magistrate Court Justice Maurice Muhammad from Birmingham, Alabama, with the update on the gun control controversy. And lastly, boots on the ground. Tonight we will salute some of the top cities in the country who are on the front line of the battlefield of helping the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan save our people. Let me start by saying, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the servant. I'd like to greet the panel guests tonight and all those in the listening audience with the greetings of peace. As-salamu alaykum. Let me get started. We have a very strong brother, a friend, a true brother. The Minister of Information, Professor Griff, is with us tonight. And I just want to say, before we bring our brother on, I want to thank him personally for being a soldier in a very, very wicked industry. I'd like to commend him for not selling out and always keeping the truth before the people, regardless of the consequences. Brother Professor Griff, assalamu alaikum, sir.
Walaikum salam. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, sir. Brother, I just want to thank you again for coming on the show. We should have quite a few people that may want to talk to you in a minute. But I want to ask you, what's going on with Public Enemy today? And give us a small history for those who may not or are not familiar with the this revolutionary group. Can you give us a small history and bring us on up to where we are today?
Well, now, you know, that's half the show right there, bro.
Yeah. That's Yes, sir.
Well, what's going on with Public Enemy? Just recently we came off the Hip Hop Gods tour, a tour that was headed by Chuck D. And he kind of put it together to let people know that we're going to bring all those old school artists back to, number one, set the record straight. To, number two, bring hip hop, take hip hop off life support. And to let a lot of these young cats know that, you know, this is the way it should be done, so we can put some integrity back in the culture, back in the art form. And and just kind of let people know. While we were on the tour, we got the news that we were about to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay. Yes, sir. Let me ask a question, because this is something I don't know. You and I come from the same generation. I was in New Jersey when you was in New York. And I want to know, how did Public Enemy get started? I know the story that you all grew up together, but how did the group actually get started?
Well, the group actually got started by Jam Master Jay and DMC, basically hearing Chuck on a Delphi radio and wanting Def Jam wanting Chuck to sign as a solo artist. But prior to that, we had already put together sort of a unit, so to speak, a DJing unit from Spectrum City, and that consisted of myself. I don't know if you remember Dr. Dre and Ed Lover from MTV.
Yes, sir.
Well, it was me,
yes,
myself,
sir.
It was Dr. Dre, Hank, and Keith Shockley from the Bomb Squad. But we had a crew called Spectrum City, along with Chuck, that used to throw the parties. But I can remember a time when me and Keith Shockley from the Bomb Squad was DJ, and we used to see Chuck in the audience. So the music was kind of already happening, you understand what I'm saying? But
right.
Chuck being on the radio at the college, at the university, we used to kind of make our own songs and just kind of play them. But surprisingly enough, the song Public Enemy Number One, where Flavor is going in on me, running into some guy on the street that wanted to challenge Chuck. And he actually called, was calling Chuck public enemy. So when Chuck made the song to put the information out there, the dude no longer wanted to battle Chuck. And Chuck did not want to sign a Def Jam without putting some kind of crew together that would make a difference. So when he reached out for me, I was already working with Hank Shockley. So we just kind of got together. And I brought the S1Ws. Myself and Chuck sat down and was coming up with these concepts. So in those meetings with myself and Chuck, we came up with the Professor Griff's Menace of Information title. We came up with the Security of the First World title. We came up with Terminator X title. So that's how it was born. Now it took shape and formed into what you see today, with the help of, the brothers that you see as the S1Ws, of course, the Bomb Squad, the 4 and 5 members of the Bomb Squad. We were actually doing first, man. We was the first group to put together a group of producers to produce an album, as opposed to one individual.
Okay.
We was the first one to have a DJ that only spoke with his hands, never talked. I don't believe anybody had ever heard Terminator X utter a word.
Absolutely.
Flavor being the hype man. There wasn't
right.
too many hype men in the business at that time, and Def Jam didn't understand what Flavor's role was. Well, hell, Def Jam didn't understand too much about any damn thing. But anyway, it was needed because they didn't understand my role, and probably
okay.
still don't. But surprisingly enough, and this is probably something that a lot of people don't know. It was never Russell Simmons who had the interest in Public Enemy. It was always Rick Rubin. Now, can you imagine that? Here, we signed it to a label. We're thinking it's a black label to kind of give us support and put out our music. And here it is, one of the few white Jewish guys that are there on the label had more interest in Public Enemy.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever seen Russell in one of our recording sessions, ever.
Well, brother, I will tell you, that was some, in the early days, watching how you all got attacked in the media like that and how they all came out, against you. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Now, when you say us or myself, because we got attacked.
Basically, it was you.
Several
yeah.
different levels.
Right.
Well,
basically, it was you. That's right.
The attack came long ago, and they couldn't figure out who and what Public Enemy was. We purposely did things to draw attention to ourselves. Like the first one of the first shows we did on one of the primary tours that we were on, we just played some irritating noise through the whole damn show because we knew they wasn't going to mention us in the paper the next day. But we was probably one of the only ones they mentioned. We turned the noise off on the second show at that same city and tore the house down. Now, nobody really knew Public Enemy then because we had already went on a tour the year ahead of that particular tour with the Beastie Boys. And the write-ups we were getting on that tour was ridiculous. And some of those same people making those same comments ended up being loyal fans today. But we put some of those comments on some of our albums. They were calling us, they were the ones that said we had all this rage. They were the ones that said that we was Farrakhanites and Muslim rap hit squads and all these kind of funny titles and names that they gave us. They said we put our S1Ws in cages with Uzis and machine guns pointing at the audience and all this kind of madness they was coming up with because they couldn't figure us out. And by the time they figured it out, we had already raised the conscious level of the people. And right. Just like our album said, you know, it's going to take a nation of millions to hold us back.
That's right.
Yeah,
remember
basically,
that,
foretelling the Million Man March, foretelling a lot of things. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. Well, what are some of the things that concern you today that you see that needs immediate attention right away? Coming up to right now, what are some of the things that concern you?
Personally speaking, if I could just get personal for a minute, what really concerns me today with the thrust of the Minister Louis Farrakhan laying out the arts and culture, laying out these particular classes and laying out the mindset that we need to bring and get young people back. And when he said arts and culture, it struck a nerve or a chord with me, pardon me, and because that's what I've always been doing. It's nothing new to me to what KRS-One came up with, which he called edutainment, educating people through music. See, this is what Public Enemy set out to do. So when the minister put this out there like that, I said, beautiful. If we could kind of set that up to use that to go get young people, then maybe we'll stand a chance, because then what we could do is draw them in and get the opportunity to at least have the dialogue. Because what concerns me today is we don't even have their attention to even have the dialogue.
Hmm.
Simply because if they're preoccupied with murdering one another and killing one another, we don't have their attention, simply because they're trying to survive like all of us are trying to survive. But my thing is, you and I do it having a knowledge of self. They're just out there blindly feeling their way through with no guidance. So the thing that concerns me today is when I travel to and fro, I see people suffering based on the same music that we use to save the people.
Mm.
So hip-hop now is almost like a blessing and a curse, because now you either have nobody getting signed, no one getting signed, or you get a handful that are signed, and those guys go off to be millionaires, and everybody takes a dump on the culture. Nobody preserves it. There's not a built-in mechanism for us to press the reset button in hip-hop to correct the problems inside of hip-hop, and no one seems to care. So now all of the problems that we had that we tackled during the 80s and 90s, they're right back around now that we're in 2013. We made songs that talked about rape. We made songs that talked about sex. We made songs that talked about child molestation. We talked about the rape, the robberies. We talked about the murder. We talked about all these things. We went from the oral tradition to the golden era of hip-hop, where we laid all of these things out. Midway through the golden era of hip-hop, it got snubbed by gangster rap. Gangster rap came in with a thrust, with silence. By the time Dr. Dre came out with the Chronic album, it silenced conscious hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, they started balling, pimping, thugging. Now we're at the metrosexual phase of hip-hop, and now cats are carrying man bags and purses and dressing up like women on stage. Thank you, Kanye West, right, and Puffin. Really appreciate that. Anyway, mm-hmm, what we need to do is, like I said in Mas Mariam, we need to go back to the street and go get it back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't think too many people heard me.
I heard you. That's right. I heard you. But I'm glad
the ministry. No, go on. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, sir. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Glad the minister gave the order to have the brothers go out back on the street. Let's go get it back. Ain't nothing wrong with that. We ain't never been no punks, man. That's
right.
How I look at it.
That's right. You said that there will be a new name to describe hip-hop in years to come. Can you elaborate on that?
I wish I could elaborate on that. I'm thinking that as the prayers go up and we meditate on this to come up with this particular methodology to save not only ourselves but our people and our arts and our culture, I'm hoping we trash the daggone name and come up with something new and change the frequency.
I think
it was Sister Tanetta Muhammad says we need to change the vibrational pitch of our thinking in order to enter into a new mind. We have to, because this present state that it's in, more young people are going to be dying at the hands of some of these songs. These songs got blood dripping off the lyrics, man.
Man, think about that.
Mm-hmm. Brother Griff, can you talk to us about, I really don't know much about it, only through your interviews. What is the Illuminati?
It's a very interesting question. I wrote a book, The Psychological Covert War, on hip-hop, dealing with the information that I've kind of rediscovered in reference to dealing with the Illuminati's takeover of hip-hop and the information that was given to us long ago by not only the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, but Steve Coakley laid it out, and other people laid it out. The Illuminati simply means the enlightened ones, holders of the light, as Adam Weishaupt, its founder, taught us that particular day. All right, but the demonic energy and frequency and the agenda existed prior to Adam Weishaupt. But when he coined the phrase the Illuminati to mean the enlightened ones, those were the individuals that's supposed to take humanity into the light and on into the future. But I tell audiences all the time that they are not the enlightened ones. We are the enlightened ones. Mm-hmm. We are the illuminated ones. Now, when you study the Illuminati, a lot of people get it twisted. And I tell them, you know, all the time, please don't get it twisted. Jay-Z, Kanye West, and the rest of these peasants, they're not part of the Illuminati. And I think I keep trying to get that across to people to get them to understand it. So in my book, I kind of lay out, what is the Illuminati, and what are the 13 bloodlines of the Illuminati? And if people would understand that these are 13 families, these are 13 bloodlines, I think we can make it very plain and very, very simplistic, simply because that blood that runs through those 13 bloodlines don't run through Jay-Z's veins. And we need to understand that. Simply as a group of men that have a secret society that put an agenda in place to control everything on the planet. When I say everything, I mean everything. So they control subsidiaries such as Monsanto's. And if you study who the Monsanto's company is, they're the ones that's responsible for the Terminator seed. Nothing is going to grow on this planet without having a number, without them controlling it. They're going to use food as a weapon. I'm just giving you that as an example. Mm-hmm. Of what kind of power they wield. I ask audiences all the time, when these people trade $500 trillion a week, it would take everybody on this phone line right now and our children to get together to count the $500 trillion and probably make a mistake and have to start over. Are you following me?
Right.
So when you talk about the Illuminati, you're not talking about peons like Jay-Z. Now, Jay-Z, Kanye West, and the rest of them may be carrying out the agenda of the Illuminati, but they're not the Illuminati. The Illuminati is the 13 bloodlines.
Okay. Okay. You talked about in one of your interviews about the murder of Brother Tupac. Can you enlighten us on that?
Well, in my book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop, I talk about not only the 27 Club, which is really shocking to some people, but I just want people to know out there that Professor Griff is not making this stuff up. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
When I talk about the 27 Club, they ask, is this something I put together? I'm like, no, I don't do things like that. The 27 Club, and you can look it up, that these entertainers and musicians and artists all died at the age of 27. Now, it may sound like conspiracy theory, but if you really look into it, we have to really truly look into it to understand it. So when we go into the depths of Biggie and Tupac, and then you connect, as John Patash taught us in his book, FBI's War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leadership, when you connect Biggie and Tupac's death to Dr. King and Malcolm X, and then you connect those deaths to some of the Black Panthers and some of the other Black leaders, then you wipe away the whole veil of conspiracy. And now we have to find the common thread that's running through the assassination of all these brothers. That's when we start to reveal the truth on what it really is.
Professor Griff, may I ask a question?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, Brother Jamil, Brother Jihad, please. I don't know if there's any math been done, but isn't it true that when Dr. King and Malcolm were dying at age 39 and these other brothers are 27, and when you add both those numbers together, they give you 66. And the symbolic importance of the number 6 to those people who deal in mythology and symbolism and Satanism, isn't it true that the 6 carries an extra charge of that energy for them as far as their thinking is concerned?
Mm. Well, I often teach this whole numerology thing, with which is a method that they actually use to determine certain things that's going to happen on the planet with certain people. And you're absolutely correct, good brother. But a lot of times when we go to our people and we put this in their lap, a lot of times they say, okay, we're reaching. It's because it's too much for them to digest because they can't believe. You see, Minister Farrakhan said that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to him that we won't be able to fathom the depth of their wickedness.
That's right.
And that's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I talk to people about the things that these people do, they say, nah, man, people don't do that. Well, yes, they do. For example, let me challenge y'all brothers that's on the phone right now. Name 3 people that died in this ritual killing that they leave the body in the water recently, over the last few years. How many people have we found in the water?
Whitney.
Whitney?
Yeah, Whitney.
That was one.
How about Rodney King?
Rodney King. That's correct.
Rodney King was found face down in a pool in his backyard.
In the pool. That's right.
So I want to ask the question, what is it about being submerged in water? And then when we pulled up the autopsy report, there's no water in the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either they were murdered and put there, or something else is going on. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Yes, sir.
See, but the average person won't take the time to study. So I don't care how simplistic I make it in the book. A lot of people still call me with the same question, and I lay it out. But the thing with the book, brother, I made it so that an eighth grader can read it. It's not one of these very difficult books. And the questions that young people were asking me made me go revamp the book two times already.
Okay. Can you tell us where we can get the book?
Well, they can call me directly, 678-557-2919. I'll just go to my website, pgriff.info. pgriff.info. Or just give me a call, 678-557-2919.
Say it one more time, Brother Professor Griff.
678-557-2919.
You're out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam tonight. Our guest, Minister of Information, Professor Griff. He's in queue. Brother Vernon, do we have any callers that would like to talk to our brother?
Yes, sir. We have one caller online from area code 215.
215. What say you, 215?
Assalamu alaikum, Brother James McKinney.
Well, alaikum salam, soldier. Yes, how you doing, soldier?
I'm doing all right.
What can we do for you, soldier? Come on and talk to us.
Yeah, Professor Griff, I was I was in Black and Nobel, and you had the psychological war against hip hop there, but I was looking for the other one. What is it called? Acapella.
The acapella revolution didn't come out yet. Matter of fact, I just finished it the other night, good brother. I'm glad you on it.
Praise
yeah,
your love.
I was looking at your at the first book you wrote, and I really need that information for the book that I'm writing, and it's very good information. I was looking at a lot of your videos. And I actually did a presentation in a class up at Temple University on how they wear make the African Americans in the acting industry wear dresses, and you know the whole thing with David Chappelle.
Right.
I did a presentation on that, and the question and answer was kind of crazy because a lot of the white people in the class thought I was gay bashing. They thought I was, and I was like. There's only like a few people that actually got what I was trying to present. And my question to you is that how do you approach that type of situation when you did you ever come into that, you know, situation when you was presenting the information, and then how do you approach that when people ask you they would ask me am I, you know, against homosexuals and, you know, that whole thing.
Brother, the way I approach it, I approach it from a factual situation. I let them know that when we prepare the table of accountability, we're bringing everyone to the table. Are you following me? And but to answer your question directly, when I say answer it in a factual way, you have to have facts, and you have to kind of understand the demographic in which you're about to speak to. And since I've done so many interviews and lectures, you know, I pretty much have these answers already there. As a matter of fact, I put those same answers in my book. I had Brother Imwalimu K. Bomani Baruti out of Atlanta, Georgia. And Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. I did two interviews with those two brothers, and I put it in the book. And Umar Abdullah Johnson goes into the homosexuality, and you know, Baruti wrote the book, Homosexuality and Feminization of the African Male. So those are two scholars that have put work out and did the work and did the research. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And we don't have to battle them in the cheap way that they like to battle. Do you understand what I'm saying? They will sit across from you while playing chess and lick their tongue at you. That's not the kind of fight you want to fight, bro. Are you following me?
Right. Yeah.
Chess is military strategy. There's no reason for me to call you names while we're playing chess. Right or wrong?
That's right.
Let them have that, bro. We need to use that energy to think about the next move.
Right. Yeah, because I basically answered the question. It was a white guy. He was asking me, well, are you homophobic? And I basically answered him and said that, well, I come by way of, like, culture. You know, Africans, this wasn't really an intricate part of African culture as opposed to European culture. It's kind of more, you know, when you get into the Greek guys and, you know, so for me to I don't deal with homosexuality because it's not really part of my culture. So that's all I really said when I answered the question. And the class turned, though, because really everybody was against me at first. It was very interesting. Everybody was kind of against what I was saying at first. And it was a blacks and media class, so most of the people are African American. Mm-hmm. There was about five or six whites in it. But when the white girl said, this was changed the tide. The white girl said, well, I don't understand your presentation because African Americans are the man's man. Because I showed all the slides of the different African Americans wearing dresses, and then I showed slides of the standard of Hollywood, which would be the man's man, like Sylvester Stallone, Clint Eastwood, these people that never wore dresses, and. She said, well, the white girl said, well, I think that the African American is the man's man. So I asked her, well, if you consider the African American male to be the man's man, then why do you think that they're putting them all in dresses? So that made all the African Americans stop and say, well, damn, this white girl is saying that the black man is the man's man? That changed the whole tide of the class, and it was very interesting. Then you had a lot of people beginning to ask questions. So it was a very interesting experience.
Well, brother, that's one of your missions. We have to move people out of their comfort zones. We got to at least give them something to think about, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But those are small battles. We have to the hearts and minds of our people. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to begin to move people out of their comfort zone. But the ultimate goal is to get our people, bro. You understand what I'm saying? We have to keep the bigger picture in mind. Those are some small battles. I deal with them every day. Matter of fact, they left me alone. Because they're not going to win this one. Not with me.
Right. Brother, is that it? Did you have to pull the foot, brother?
Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to know when his book was coming out. I was talking to Hakeem and I was asking about it. He was saying, he said the same thing that you were saying, that the book didn't come out yet. So I was just wondering.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, probably in about 3 weeks, good brother.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you, brother, for your call. Brother Vernon, can you let everybody know what number that what they can press, how they can get in queue? Because some people probably don't know that they can get in queue and talk to brother.
Yes, sir. If you want to join the conversation, dial in at 646-716-5971 and push 1 on your phone. I'll bring you right in.
Praise be to Allah. Brother Griff, let me ask a question. You was talking about in one interview with Brother Donnie Peebles on YouTube, about certain brothers who are in hip hop who are counselors now. These are like elders now, you know, who have paid a price. You know, I think you mentioned Chris, like brothers like yourself, Chuck, LL, and many others. What can be done since we've gone through the beef period? We've gone through that whole madness now. How can we get the brothers to atone and bring a council together so that we can take this thing back? Or can it be done that way?
It can be done that way, but I think the founding fathers of hip hop are gonna have to take the charge and bring it back, because those are the only ones that you can look right across the spectrum, right across the board in hip hop that all of us respect.
Okay.
And we understand that it's that the economic thing is at stake here, simply because once you set it right and set it straight, then the Kanye Wests fall off. Because if you're not adhering to the four fundamentals of hip hop, once we do bring it back together and you're not adhering to that, then all this kind of cute little trip hop and strip hop and all these other different variations, they will no longer exist. If you really listen to the hip hop that's being played on the radio and the TV, and that's backing some of these multinational corporations with their products, then that's not even real hip hop. They're actually rapping over dance music now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so weak, it doesn't speak to the soul anymore. You know, it speaks to a different energy center. It probably speaks to the lower chakras, your lower energy centers.
Well, is anything working now? Is anything in play that can actually bring the unity of the whole back together? Is anything going on right now that we can talk about? That's maybe something going on right now that's bringing the brothers back together and the sisters. Can't forget them.
I think what's actually happening now with what Chuck is doing with the Hip Hop Gods tour is bringing it back, because I believe while we were on tour, Chuck got over 40 calls from all of these artists that we're talking about right now. So short tours, up front, up close, in person, can't fake it, can't lip sync it. You got to be real. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And
now,
this is the thrust. This is the thrust of my book, The Acapella Revolution. Can you imagine? Let me give you a test real quick. What's your favorite artist?
Oh, brother. Brother Rafi, help me with this, brother. James Brown, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
So I just need one. Let's just take Earth, Wind, and Fire. Can you imagine if you had Maurice White in front of you, all right, along with Philip Bailey, and they broke down one of your favorite songs with no music? How about they broke down Shining Star or Reason?
Yes.
They just sang it a cappella, and then they explained to you how they wrote the song. What was the inspiration to write the song? All right? What was the motivation to write the song? What do the lyrics mean? That's the a cappella revolution. Can you imagine Rick Ross and one of these characters coming to a show and you got no half-naked chicks on stage, no Maybach, your whole crew is not on stage, just you with your lyrics, a cappella? Talk to us. What do your lyrics mean? That's the a cappella revolution. We're going to have to get it back to that point, to the point where it's organic and the integrity is back in the art form.
Okay. Now, let me ask another question, because, as you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is asking for us to help him raise $10 million to help buy farmland so that we can go ahead and feed our own people and do something for ourselves.
Don't worry about it. I'll write that check tomorrow. We got that. Don't worry about it. Nah, come on.
that's the point I'm making with the music industry that we have that could be taken care of overnight.
Overnight, bro. Overnight. Let me tell you something. I've seen artists like Little John, man, throw 10 G's away in a strip club, dude. You understand what I'm saying? I'm like, come on. Get that overnight. We can get that overnight. Seriously. That's nothing. nothing, but the thing is, they don't see themselves like we see ourselves. What do I mean by that? If they know that we had this common thread running through us, we have the same struggle, the same enemy. You understand what I'm saying? We have the same upbringing. We came from the same hood. You understand what I'm saying? We were nursed from the same breast in the same ghetto, but they don't see it that way. They see themselves being this black elite that, and they're part of the haves, and we're part of the have-nots.
Oh, brother. Oh, boy. And this is terrible, brother, because... Yes, sir, go right ahead.
But no, this wasn't set up by us. That was set up by the grand design. That was the grand design, because the enemy knew that we would get to this point. That we would wake up and the music was waking us up. So what did he do? He set something in motion. Now listen, there was an anonymous letter that was put out on the internet last year sometime. This anonymous letter spoke to, the gentleman basically said he was at a meeting of the execs that owned major record labels. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly enough, I'm going to tell the short version of the story. Surprisingly enough, these same execs owned and invested into private prisons. So they came up with a grand scheme to niggerize hip-hop, to move brothers and sisters to occupy the cells at the private prisons by criminalizing the music, by niggerizing the music. So if they knew, if they talked about drugs, being gangster, being thugs, Reagan, bagging chicks, smoking weed, all these negative things, that eventually it'll lead to more crime, and then the more crime, the more criminals on the street, the more people that they can arrest and get in the system, the private prisons will be full. Now, these are people with invested interest in the music industry. So they tied the music industry to the private prison industrial complex, this prison industrial complex. That's a hell of a thing, man.
Yes, it is.
It's anonymous letter. You can read it on the internet.
They were talking about one newscaster, how they were insulted because they went to the locker room of the Miami Heat, and all they heard was hip hop. But the players that they're listening to hip hop, the ball players.
Right.
Everybody's listening to hip hop. And brother, if it's just a way that we can take this thing back, because so many people follow hip-hop.
Mm.
so many people follow hip hop. I mean, it would amaze you to find out the millions of followers.
Right.
Of people who follow hip hop. And if it was a way, brother, that you all can organize this and take this back, brother, we could probably get our people free overnight. Just with the energy of hip hop.
Yes, exactly. But we have to take it back from those that are the imposters that's faking this hip hop thing. If you look at the trends in hip hop, they're doing everything to weaken it. And what the brother just spoke about, the last caller, what he spoke about was one of the trends that they're setting in motion, the effeminization of the African male. They're using these things to weaken the spirit and the vibration of hip hop. He talked about, he did a presentation at Temple University dealing with African American males in dresses. Okay, well, that's the aesthetics. If people only coming to see hip-hop, that's what you're going to see. But how about the people coming to feel hip-hop, to hear hip-hop? Then you're going to hear dance music tracks, synthesized music. You're not going to hear the gutsy beats and rhymes, the boom bit, we used to call it. You understand what I'm saying? That spoke to the soul. You don't hear that anymore. You know, we used to bang on the lunch table and boom, boom, ah.
That's right. Back in school.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right. Yes, sir.
But we don't hear that anymore. So it's imperative that they promote and push groups like Black Eyed Peas, because they installed the white woman and put her right in the middle of them. You understand what I'm saying? So we have to understand their strategy in order to counteract it. And there are people that's on the front lines that are writing books and doing lectures and putting the information out there. But guess what, brother? Those of us that need those tools and that ammunition, we're not listening. We're not listening. I had people walk out of a lecture because I invited John Patash, who just so happens to be white. Hell, if he got the damn information, listen to the man. You understand what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right.
Can't tell you how many white people, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, that I extract information from. I'm a revolutionary man on the front lines. You drop me in the city, and I have nothing on me. I got to go get some tools. You understand what I'm saying? To use to fight these battles, this war. If he put the information together and he used the documents from the FBI files, hell, they ain't letting my black behind up in there to get no files. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
But we let these kind of things kind of shut us down to the point where we become neutralized, which I think is very sad.
Right. What books do you encourage the audience to really read and really get involved so they can really hear and understand what you're talking about? Name us some books that we can go and invest in.
Well, there's four or five books that I use every time I do my lecture and let people know that if you got a hold of these few books, then maybe it'll help you understand the subject matter. But, you know, the books are serious read. They're not one of these kind of play kind of things. And a lot of people think this is entertainment. Some aspects of it is entertaining, but this is not entertainment. This is serious. Some of these gentlemen have served time in prison for putting this work out. So I would suggest people read Bloodlines of the Illuminati by Fritz Springmeier. That's Bloodlines of the Illuminati by Fritz Springmeier. Codex Magica, Secret Signs, Mystery Symbols, and the Hidden Codes of the Illuminati by Tex Mars. And these main two books right here will serve as a basis for people understanding symbology. Not only understanding symbology, and symbology is, they have a whole language that they've developed. It's called doublespeak. Let me tell you the one that they trained to use this particular technique, George Bush Jr. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, this idiot was in office for 8 years. I couldn't even understand one thing this idiot was talking about. He could he couldn't even get through a complete sentence because he used this language and this technique called double speak. And double speak, he wasn't talking to us. Language that he used, he spoke English, but he spoke it in such a way where he spoke to the people that trained their ears to hear the message inside of the message. You can get the Masonic and occult symbols by Kathy Burns.
Kathy Burns?
Kathy Burns, yes. Very, very, very deep book. When I first read about the Illuminati, I read about it in a book called Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr. And as everybody know my story, I named my first album after that book, Pawns in the Game, by William Guy Carr, Canadian, who laid out the entire story of the Illuminati in the introduction of his book. Then I would suggest that people, this is not a book, but Google The Secret Covenant. The Secret Covenant lays out the entire plan of the Illuminati. There's a book that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan mentioned by Zbigniew Brzezinski, The Grand Chessboard. That's the Zbigniew Brzezinski, The Grand Chessboard. And there's a sister out of New York, Rebecca Scott. She has a book called The Hip Hop Illuminati. Very well written, and it's basic that people can readily, readily grasp and readily understand. But listen, brother, they do something that's very critical. They got this thing called hidden in plain sight. They'll put it in the movies and lay out some of the plan in the movies. And while we're getting indoctrinated, sitting in a dark movie theater for 2 hours, eating that chemicalized death called buttered popcorn, we're unaware that we're becoming Manchurian candidates. So we have to read Yuri Dalbinko's Hoodwinked, Yuri Dalbinko's other book, Bushwhacked. That's Yuri, U-R-I. His last name is Dalbinko, D-O-W-B-E-N-K-O. I would suggest people go get the movie, The Manchurian Candidate, both of them, the original one, black and white, and the one with Denzel Washington. Study the movie Paycheck with Ben Affleck. Study the movie that Tom Cruise is in, Minority Report.
Right.
Because of that movie, Kanye West came out with his album, Universal Mind Control. Mm-hmm. You see, I understand the brothers using... No, go on, good brother.
Let me ask you one question. We've been getting movies about slavery lately. Lincoln and Django Unchained. Can I get your thoughts on those before you go?
Yeah, but let me say this real quick. You and I both know that there's a reason why they hold back on these movies and they set these movies to come out at a certain time. You and I both know dealing with the esoteric meaning of certain occult rituals that a large amount of blood have to be spilled every year. So just like we are taught, in the science of that we were given recently, that certain things in black people, once they become re-stimulated, then we start to act from that reactive mind, right? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. If that is true, then on a large, massive scale, why wouldn't they take that particular science and apply it to arts and culture and entertainment by releasing a movie at a certain time, re-stimulating millions of people all at once? So now the conversation becomes about slavery all over again. No new information now. Nothing else was introduced new to bring us to the resolve. But all we do is get re-stimulated. Now, how do I tie this into what I'm saying? I taught a lecture recently in Atlanta, and we dealt with a holiday homicide. And one of the first holidays I dealt with is this fake holiday, the New Year. White people used to celebrate the New Year April 1st. How did it become January 1st? Simply because January 1st, we know it's a commercial holiday. We know it's commercialism. But because January, the ritual that they go through is a very deep ritual, but a lot of us, it gets by a lot of us. Now, brother, listen to me. In every major city across the country, December 31st, right, they have this countdown to the new year, which is supposed to be January 1st. But in every major city, there's either apple dropping, a ball drop, a peach drop. Something is dropping, right or wrong?
That's correct.
What that symbolizes on a metaphysical level, it symbolizes the energy dropping back down to the lower chakras. So all year long, you're raising the kundalini energy up. Warriors are getting their weight up, so to speak. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We've survived the madness all year. So what do they have to do? They have to bring that energy back down to the lower chakras where they can control our urges and our desires. This is why they have to release these movies at the time that they release them. They have to bring the kundalini energy back down to the lower energy centers. And this is where they keep us. They keep us revolving backwards around the lower chakras, which is the lower energy centers, which are responsible for sex, food, desires, material things. And that's where they keep us. But because we think we get these things, we think we're safe, and we think this makes us, and we know these material things grounds us to this world, and we know this world is on its way out.
Right. You're out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam tonight. Our guest, Minister of Information, Professor Griff, Public Enemy, is in the house tonight. Brother Vernon, do we have a caller? Brother Griff is on his way out. We got a few minutes left with our brother. Do we have any callers in queue, Brother Vernon?
We got loads of people listening, but no hands raised just yet.
No hands raised. They don't want to talk to the professor.
Well, maybe
he's probably answering
sign.
All the questions, brother. Oh, brother, praise be to our brother.
Can I tell the people?
You just got one that raised their hand.
They got a few minutes.
Gidget?
Come right ahead. Who's in queue?
This is the good Sister Gidget.
Oh, okay.
Sister Gidget, your mic is open. All right.
Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Gidget.
How are you? How is everyone?
Wonderful, right. Sister.
I just wanted to come on and tell Professor Griff that we are so honored to have him on the show, and we hope that he comes back and shares some more knowledge with us. So thank you, Professor Griff, for joining us tonight.
Oh, give thanks. I really appreciate that, Sister. I don't know what part of the country you're in, but I'll be speaking at Soul 57 in D.C. this Monday, dealing with the pimps, the president, the preachers, and the pulpit.
Videotape that, right, so we can get a copy, because I'm in Texas.
Oh, okay. I'll definitely make sure they videotape it, because this is the third time I'm doing this particular lecture, and we need to make the connection between the pimp and the preacher, and then connected to Barack Obama being the president of a corporation and definitely not the country. We need to talk about that.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
So listen,
and we're going to get you back on the show for that.
Oh, give thanks. I really appreciate that, Sister. But can I give the people the number on where to call for this?
Oh, brother,
this
please.
Lecture?
Yes.
It's 240-464-0268. That's 240-464-0268. That's Brother Omar Wally. And that's this Monday, January 21st, I'm at the Soul 57 in Washington, D.C. That's 1326 Florida Avenue. We're going to deal with the pimps, the preachers, the president, and the pulpit.
You got anything else coming up, Brother Griff?
Pardon me?
Yeah, do you have anything else coming up?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we're headed towards this Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, good brother. April 18th in L.A., Public Enemy is going to be the first group to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that's actually going to perform that night.
Wow,
and,
okay.
They're making it an HBO special, and we're letting the world know that is we're taking it, we're receiving this award and accepting this award on the behalf of 30 to 40 to 70 million black people, all those that were, all those that are, and all those that will be fighters for liberation for black people in America and throughout the world.
Praise be to Allah. Brother, you've got a few, about 3 minutes left, Brother Griff. say what you want. Talk to the audience for a moment before you leave out. Just give us something, sir. Just talk to us from the heart.
I was really like just a heart felt 2 or 3 minutes. I just want brothers and sisters to understand that when sojourning in mosque number 7, I didn't know I would end up at this point. I knew that I was thinking about putting something together, all right, to be a better fisher of men. I was FOI in the ranks, well, I am FOI in the ranks, just like the next brother. You understand what I'm saying? And
quiet as it's kept,
good brother, there's a lot of brothers out there that is in hip hop that came through the ranks. They just won't admit it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them secretly study the teachings. Some of them have to stay plugged into the minister in private. But when I have those personal conversations with them, you know, they admit it. You understand what I'm saying? I talk to the CeeLo Greens and the brothers from New Edition and other brothers that I'm cool with. You know, they play the minister on their bus like we do. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
But a lot of times when these brothers are doing their thing, a lot of times they have to keep it on the hush. But if they could, they would openly thank the minister. But we understand we're dealing with military strategy. So sojourning in the ranks, all right, it gave me backbone. I wouldn't be able to do this without the teachings. Let me tell you something, brother. Let me tell you what I told some brothers the other night. You mean, I said, try walking in size 8 Professor Griff boot. They said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, brother, I step off the stage performing in front of 70,000 people, and then I go right back to the community, and I do the work. Bypassing hundreds of chicks calling your name, pocket full of money. You could drag any one of them back to the hotel. There's weed and coke and all kinds of stuff being thrown my way, and I shun it all to stay on my square, all right, to go out and teach the people and to continue to be a fisher of men. Now, how many brothers can honestly stand up and say that they can pass those tests? Not too many, good brother.
Come on.
They're not passing that up. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So we're all going to be tried and tested severely at least 3 times a year. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So I just let people know this is not an easy struggle, but I'm consistent. I was at this this lecture the other night with Anthony Browder, Professor Smalls, and Umar Abdullah Johnson. We was viewing Hidden Colors 2. I took a picture with the sister. She said, only thing I want to say to you, brother, is just thanks for being consistent.
Beautiful.
And
beautiful.
I took that and ran with it. I said, give thanks, good sister. No big I and little you. I am because we are. Therefore, I am.
That's
our good brother, Steve Biko. I am because we are, therefore I am. And I let that sister know, I can't be the kind of man I am without you. You understand what I'm saying?
That's correct.
But it's just, I'm filled with that particular spirit, man, that I hope and pray that this teaching will get into these young brothers like it got into me, and they would embrace it, and we can stand up and defend this nation, good brother. That's it. That's
beautiful.
All I can say.
Praise be to our brother Griff. You got a home here. Anytime you want to come on and talk, brother, you can just give Brother Jahad a call. I'm right there for you, soldier. Anytime you want to come on the air, something you want to share with the people, or if you want an announcement made about anything, let me know, brother. This is your home, sir.
All right. My number is 678-557-2919. That's 678-557-2919. I'm going to get my behind out of the way for Brother Jamil, man, because I don't want to get in his way.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
May Allah bless you, sir, and we'll keep in touch, sir.
All right, give thanks. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. You're out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam. That was our brother, soldier, FOI, Minister of Information, Public Enemy, Professor Griff. Brother Vernon, are you still there, sir?
Yes, sir, my brother. I'm right here with you.
Let's go on and ride with these top 10 as we bring Brother Jamil on. He's going to like this. We want to talk about those cities that's got their boots on the ground, as Brother Griff was talking about, that's in the community working on behalf of our people. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, the way that you can slay the devil is by raising our people up. because that's one that he missed. So we want to give honor and praise tonight and thanks and a salute to some of those major cities that got their boots on the ground and is slaying the devil. Let's go down at number 10, Baltimore. Muhammad's Mosque number 6. The FOIs got their boots on the ground in Baltimore, slaying the enemy in Baltimore. Number 9, let's go on back up a little bit. New Brunswick, Brother James, Student Minister James Muhammad, right up there in New Brunswick. He's out there with the FOI, and they're slaying the devil as they raise their people. Come on up a little bit. Houston, Texas, Minister Robert and the soldiers down there in Texas. They got their boots on the ground, soldiers, and they're slaying the enemy as they raise their people from a dead level. Number 8, Buffalo, New York. Buffalo's got their boots on the ground. Shout out to the soldiers in Buffalo, New York. Come on up now. Number 7, Mighty, Mighty Mosque 25, North New Jersey. Brother Lawrence, Student Minister Lawrence, and Student Captain Arthur Muhammad, they got their boots on the ground in North New Jersey as they go to the streets, slaying the enemy, raising their people from a dead level. Let's move on up. Let's go on the West Coast. Mosque 27, Los Angeles. The soldiers, the FOI minister, Student Minister Tony Muhammad, and his student captain, Haleem, got their boots on the ground with the FOI as they're slaying the enemy right out there in California, L.A., Compton. All praise is due to Allah. Let's move on. Come on back down to the southeast. Give a shout out to my minister, Student Minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad, and his student captain, Student Captain Oliver Muhammad, as the FOI in Atlanta, Georgia, got their boots on the ground right down here in Atlanta, Georgia. Shout out, 15. Oh, let's go on up now. Number 6, Detroit, number 1. Where it all begun. They got their boots on the ground as they're soldiering out there in Detroit. Shout out to the soldiers, the FOI, in Detroit, Michigan, number 1. Oh, top of the clock. That's right. Number 12, Philadelphia, PA. The soldiers got their boots on the ground as they're slaying the enemy in Philadelphia. Top of the clock. Shout out, Philly. Let's go on down to Boston. Let's keep it moving up top to Boston, Massachusetts. Minister Don and all the soldiers up in Boston, Massachusetts. They got their boots on the ground in Boston. Shout out, FOI. In Boston. Now hold up now. Let's go to the big Missouri. St. Louis, Muhammad's Mosque number 28. Shout out, soldiers, to the FOI as they go out every day slaying the enemy, raising their people from a dead level. Shout out, St. Louis, the fruit of Islam. Oh, this city is so nice they had to name it twice. Coming on up, number 3, New York City. Got their boots on the ground in New York City out there slaying the enemy for God. Come on, Brother Hafiz. Salute to you, sir, and your student captain, Brother Richard Muhammad. My minister, Washington, D.C., the soldier who helped train me. My minister, Student Minister Abdul Qadir Muhammad, and his captain of Washington, D.C., number 2, was slaying the enemy in D.C., number 4. And number 1, the number 1 slayer of the enemies of God. It is that mighty city, Chicago. Minister, Student Minister Ishmael and his captain, Student Captain Anthony Muhammad, slaying the enemy right there in Chicago. Chicago, the number 1 slayer of the enemies of God. Shout out to Chicago. Original salute to the Supreme Captain Mustafa Farrakhan. All praise is due to Allah. We'll be back next week with some more going into the regions as we deal with the little study groups that's out there putting it down. All praise is due to Allah. At this time, let us bring forth our brother, who is no stranger to our show and to Nation Building Network. He's here tonight to help talk to us about the foundation the Wedding Bliss Foundation. Let me bring forth to the mic my brother and yours, my minister, student minister, Brother Jamil Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, dear Brother Jihad, and to all of the listeners here, I want to let you know I, too, have my boots on the ground.
Praise be to Allah, brother. How are you, sir?
Well, I thank Allah, brother. You know, every day is an opportunity to get it right, and every day above ground is a good day. Because once you get down underneath there, 6 feet under, you can't do nothing about whatever got you there. So thank
Come
Allah
on.
That I'm on top of the ground. I really am grateful to be on your program tonight, to you, to Brother Vernon, to the whole family that makes it possible. I heard Sister Gidget a while ago, and certainly our first guest, the great Professor Griff, our Minister of Information from Public Enemy, and wherever he goes, I didn't say he's limited to Public Enemy, but he's from Public Enemy, and he goes wherever he can tell the truth. It's an honor to follow him onto these airwaves and to greet you and your audience this evening.
Brother, beautiful. We have a brother that's with us tonight also, a brother, Rafi Muhammad from Muhammad's Mosque, number 25, who's locking it down with Brother Vernon tonight as well, Brother Jamil. He's been with us, and he's on his grind, sir. Praise be
Thank
to Allah.
Thank you, Brother Rafi, and it's always good to hear from the brothers in North. And as I looked at the top 10 tonight, a lot of stuff. I'm not Jerry Lee Lewis, but I have to tell you, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. And what I
yes,
mean
sir.
By that is that everywhere around the country, you find the soldiers moving. Next week, when you recite the study groups, you'll hear that not only in the major cities, but in the so-called smaller areas,
that's right.
OI is actually moving, and their boots are on the ground. But
that's
tonight,
right.
I want to say a special word of congratulations to those cities who made a vault into the top 10 and whose population does not seem to justify it. When you look at New Brunswick, New Jersey, from
right.
mosque number 85, there in Franklin Township, right on the edge of New Brunswick, with Minister James and our dear brother Joseph and Captain Joseph and Student Minister James, they're doing a fine job in New Brunswick and Plainfield and around that central part of New Jersey, Bridgewater and Raritan and Hobbstown and all that
yes.
area there. They're doing a fine job getting the newspaper out. But look again at the number 3 and 4 position. Look at how a city like St. Louis vaulted over
Come on.
Boston and Philadelphia and Detroit and Houston and jumped up in that rarefied atmosphere with New York, Washington, and Chicago.
Ain't that something?
In St. Louis, Brother Student Captain John is backing Brother Student Minister Donald, and they're getting some things done there on the banks of the mighty Mississippi. So I'm
Come
very
on now.
Happy to hear that the soldiers across the country are getting it in. Wherever we are, we're standing up for Allah, for His Christ, for righteousness, for freedom, justice, and equality, for Islam, and for the future of our children. I'm fired up to be an FOI, and I thank you very much for having me on the program tonight. I'm lacing up my Stacey's right now. Come on, brother.
Come on, soldier. Come on, soldier. Talk about them Stacey's. Yes, sir. Yes, brother. Talk to me. Talk to us tonight, the listening audience tonight, about the Wedding Bliss Foundation, sir. Can you talk to us about that? What
well,
is that
know,
all
funny,
about?
I sent you a couple of text messages while we were on earlier, and I have to be very specific about this. If you look up Wedding Bliss, gosh knows what you'll find. We are the Wedded, W-E-W-E-D-D-E-D, Wedded Bliss Foundation. The Wedded
right.
Bliss Foundation
okay.
is a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit that was founded by our sister, the former student regional captain of the Mid-Atlantic Region's MGT, Sister Nisa Islam Muhammad. The
Shout Wedded out, Bliss Sister Foundation, Nisa.
Yes,
yes, sir.
Shout out to her wherever she may be in the sound.
Right. Yes.
Put together a group of committed brothers and sisters who represent happy, healthy, wholesome, strong black marriages and strong black families in our communities. You say, well, that sounds kind of hokum. It's really kind of, you know, stereotypical. But no, brother, it is a vast, vast gulch of driving
yes.
our families. And the need is pronounced and prevalent for the truth that Allah has determined in Islam, that
mm-hmm.
marriage is half of our faith. And we got to be able to do it and do it right so that we can make success for our people. In Christianity, we learn from the Bible that he who findeth a wife findeth a good thing. And then we learn in Christianity that wives are to submit themselves to their husbands and husbands are to submit themselves to their wives. Often we leave that second part out. But it comes into where they're actually working together under the guidance of God through the example of Jesus the Christ. Any way you look at it, in Black America, we've fallen woefully short. So Sister Nisa put together this organization, and then within a few months after its inception, back in 2002, about 11 years ago, she asked me to come on board as a program director of the organization. I thought that was kind of quizzical. I raised my eyebrow, but I didn't say anything. She kept talking, Brother Jihad, and then she said, I want you to represent this teaching and teach a curriculum called Basic Training for Couples, which deals with actual preparation for marriage and preparation for a successful marriage by couples that are already married, with an 8-week, 2-hour-per-week intensive 16-hour curriculum of real academic content that prepares couples to succeed. Now, when she said that to me, Brother Jihad, and you know me, and we've been knowing each other, me and you now, brother, 30 years. And
right.
When she said that, I said, yeah, we met when we were both 3 years old, okay? Yeah. But when she said that to me, brother, I said, wait a minute, you want me to represent marriage and family in the public after my glaring failures and my missteps and my shortfalls and my miscues? You want me to stand up in front of people and tell them how they can be successful at marriage when I myself have been such a flame-out failure? She said, you are honest enough to tell the truth about where you erred before, and you're committed enough to Black people to tell them the truth about how they don't have to err in the future.
That's
and
good
so
teaching.
That's how we began, and that's where we are today. We just came from a successful class here in the Washington, D.C. area where we have couples that are nearing the end of this current class of 8 weeks, and they're together, they're working, and we're moving to try to make some changes. Let me just say before I leave the subject, brother, that Black people in America are the least married people on earth. I'm going to say that again. Our marriages fail. Or more often is the case, they fail to happen even in the first place. 75% of our children are being raised in single-parent households, which are usually a mom with no dad. 70% of our children are born outside of wedlock. Do you understand what that means, brother? That means that at no time since slavery has such a high percentage and such a vast majority of our young people been raised without the structure of a two-parent, stable, married household. When you go to Ivy League colleges, you know the ones, for our friends in New York, when you go uptown to Columbia, in Philly, when you go down to the University of Pennsylvania, or if you go over to Brown or Dartmouth, if you go there to Cornell and Harvard and Yale, when you go to those schools, the very best that America has to offer, the Black students who go there, 90% of them come from two-parent married households. But, dear Brother Jihad, when you go to the D.C. jail right here in this town, or when you go down to the detention center in Philadelphia or Holmesburg, when you go to the Tombs, or when you go to Rikers Island in New York, do you know, brother, at the Essex County Jail in New Jersey, do you know, brother, that the average percentage of inmates in those institutions who come from single-parent households is also between 80 and 90%? The outcomes for your children determine are based on whether you will marry your child's other parent. People say, well, I don't want to bond with her. Too late, buddy. You bonded with her when you made the baby. Now you want to make sure that you stand up and leave the baby alone? Now, I'm not telling you in every case that you have to be married to the child's biological father or mother, but I'm saying that marriage, a strong and healthy marriage of the parent, predicts a better outcome for the children. That's one of the benefits of marriage in Black America. So every time you marry your wife and stay married to her, and it's hard, it's tough, and it don't always work, Allah permits divorce even though he hates it. So we're going to try to make sure we don't put what he hates in front of him. Dear brother, we got to stand in there and slug it out and bring this benefit. You know, every time you marry a beautiful Black woman, every time, sister, you get one of those great gods of a Black man to be your husband, that's an act of revolution against this slave master. It's an act of revolution to take that acapella revolution that Brother Griff was talking about a few moments ago and saying we get down to the basics, we strip it down, we break down how it was built, where it came from, what was the creative impetus behind it so we understand it and we can recreate that brilliance in the next creation that comes along. That's what your marriage is. So all of us, we owe it to ourselves to fight for our marriages, fight for our relationships. Don't accept just a weak marriage with somebody you really don't like, doing a bunch of stuff you really don't like, and you're angry with them, and they mad with you, and you go to bed angry, and get up angry, and step away cold, and be nasty and mean, and then here comes some floozy that flounces along. I'm going to just tell it the way it is. We on Blog Talk Radio.
Come on. 100. That's right. Come on.
Then here comes some slick chick running around, and she throw herself at you, and you just a sucker, and you go for it, and you destroy the family that you were gifted and started to build. You think your husband is nothing because he can't do this and he can't do that, and you see the money and you see the flashiness of the hustlers in your neighborhood, and you think, my husband ain't got nothing. He's a sucker. He go to work every day and break his neck for that petty little check. I need to get me a hustler that's balling out of control. So you leave the good man, and you end up in a whirl of hurt because you didn't understand that the commitment that we make is a commitment that can be enlivened and made pleasurable and made enjoyable. And I'm telling you, this time, brother, when I get married, I'm going to stay married for life. Ooh, Lord have mercy. I ain't playing no more.
Come on, soldier.
Brother Vernon, you ought to listen to me. When I, brother Rafi, I know y'all hear me, but I'm telling you, when you do it, brother, don't go back and go the other way. Sister Gidget, can I get somebody to raise their hand and say amen? I'm trying to tell you that in this house on this morning, we have to bear witness that God has given us a gift, but we have to treat that gift right. You got to treat it right. You know what I mean? My boo asked me today. Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question for you. I want to ask for the young soldiers out there. Courtship. Mm-hmm. Talk to us in the few moments that we have on the subject about courtship and the proper way of courting.
Well, brother, you know, the courtship process in the Nation of Islam is a real wonder to behold. It really is. And the reason why I say that is because it deals with and projects us toward the actual, it projects us toward the actual discovery of information that can lead to our success if we are serious about it, or can lead to us successfully avoiding pursuing that which would fail. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? The courtship process,
yes, sir.
It protects the reputation and the moral standing of the man and the woman. You see? So by keeping them from being in compromising positions, in situations that are not entirely kosher, and people get to whispering about this one and that one, and her reputation ain't this, and his reputation ain't that. And you know, like, you know, Biggie Smalls used to say, you know, if you're listening to what your girlfriend's mentioned, he's a hoe, he's a slut, he's a freak, got a different girl every day of the week. You don't want to have that. You know, you want to have a courtship that is based on righteous conduct and principle. And the righteous conduct and principle can be for you, even if you have been all those things that Biggie described. If you were somebody who wasn't moral and wasn't principled and didn't treat the Black woman with the respect that she deserved, if you were the kind of a woman whose mouth was full of hell, if you were the kind of a woman, can y'all hear me all right?
Yes, sir, I can hear you just fine.
Yeah. If you were the kind of a woman whose mouth was full of hell, you kept your hand on your hip and your eyes were always rolling and it was always something for you to say and you always had something snappy to come back with, even if that was you yesterday,
the courtship process and the real study of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as given to us by Minister Farrakhan shows us that we are some of the most progressive members of the worldwide Muslim Ummah when it comes to the process of courtship and preparation for marriage. It is a really wonderful process, brother, and I encourage everyone who seeks to find a wife to do it the right way. And sisters, if you want to have a husband, don't get desperate because ain't no man look at me. I've been in the mosque 10 months. Lord have mercy. I'm 21, and I hear my biological clock ticking. Hush, girl, hush, hush. Just calm down, settle in, and be the best that you can be for yourself. And prepare yourself for what Allah has in store for you. And then, and I'm not trying to be spooky, and I want to ask the callers when you call in, don't be sitting out there listening and don't raise your hand in that queue. Push one and let's talk tonight. Let's talk. Let's have some good radio and let's talk. Because this is the issue that makes our families tick, that makes them run. And I thank Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan bringing to the fore and enforcing and informing and infusing and enlightening the process of courtship by letting us know how we can get better at choosing the right mate. I leave you by saying, or on this subject at least, I leave you by saying that the proper way of courtship and the selection of mate and spouse is one of the things that the Caucasian knew about and made up in his mind never to teach us. When they allocated funds in the federal houses of government in the U.S. Congress in 1925, they entered into the congressional record the statement, Brother Jihad, Brother Rafi, they entered into the record, Brother Vernon, that they would not teach black people three sciences. Number one, the science of military science, the science of business and economics, and the science of proper mating. It's true, the Negro is still confused militarily because whatever military impetus or warrior spirit we have is sadly and tragically turned on each other while we slay each other in the streets like wild dogs and animals. We're not available to know and learn the science of business because when you graduate with your degree, you're proud to have it, but remember what you have is a Master's of Business Administration. You have a Bachelor's of Business Administration. You got a BS in finance or a BS in insurance or a BS in actuarial sciences. You don't have the degrees that help you manipulate world markets and deal with commodities across the globe. You're trying to get a job. So you don't learn the science of business. Finally, you don't learn the science of mating because you mate catch as catch can, happenstance. Your spirit don't match her spirit. Your ideas don't match her ideas. You see things differently from him, but you run and jump the broom because you're attractive to each other in a hormonal, pheromonal, physical, or sexual sense. But we've got to rise above that, and we got to rise into the knowledge of self and begin to think properly how to court and how to marry and how to build strong black families. And every time the enemy sees your family, his heart will drop, his stomach will churn, his guts will wrench, his brain will begin to boil inside the fluid of his tiny little cave-dwelling skull because he hates to see the black man and woman in love with each other, building a strong family, loving their children and teaching them the knowledge of self and others, the knowledge of God and the devil, the knowledge of the time and what must be done, the knowledge of good and evil, black and white, and the knowledge of how to handle a business in a world like this. Man, I'm excited to be on your show, man. It's the
praise
best
be to Allah.
The best place to raise up, baby.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Is there a website, Brother Jamil?
Sure. You
for
can
the,
visit. Yeah, for the Wedded Bliss Foundation. I want you to go to www.weddedblissinc.com. That's www.weddedblissinc.com. www.weddedblissinc.com. Or you can call our office for scheduling of speaking engagements, or you can call our office for anything that you need in terms of information and supplies and materials. Reach us at area code 202 696-5150. That phone, in fact, rings on my desk, and I'd love to hear from you at your earliest convenience. That's 202-696-5150, and we'll respond to you right away.
Beautiful. Brother Vernon, is there any callers in queue that would like to talk to Brother Jamil on this subject before we move on?
Because if there's no callers, I'm hanging up on you. What?
Loads of callers on the line. They're all just listening. If you want to join the conversation, press one on your phone, and I'll bring you in.
That's like them jokers that come to the barbecue, come to the cookout, want to eat everything, and don't even bring a couple of 2 liters of ginger ale. Just want to eat and don't bring nothing.
And then leave the party, huh?
And then leave the party picking their teeth coming. It was cool, but they should have had more fried fish. Come on, somebody.
Praise be to Allah.
We need more than just a two-sided dialogue, more than just a monologue. We need to have a discussion around this country about the urgency and the need for black families to come together.
State of emergency.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is saying, and he's starting a 52-week lecture series on Saturday evenings at 7 Eastern, 6 Central, and 4 o'clock Pacific time on Saturday afternoon.
That's
the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is talking about the time and what must be done. One of the things that he has sounded as a consistent theme over the course of his ministry, which lasts in the years back 50 or more years, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said to us that the black family must survive. It was Minister Farrakhan who gave the statistical analysis of Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Real Flesh and Context, when he talked from the rostrum of Mosque No. 7 about the senator's report on the future of the black family in the late 60s and early 70s. It's Minister Louis Farrakhan that told you and me that divorce is a threat to our national security in the Nation of Islam. It's Minister Louis Farrakhan that told us that family is the basic building block for a nation and marriage is the cornerstone of family. It's Farrakhan that's teaching you and me that thing that we need to survive and thrive. So tune in on Saturdays at www.noi.org and click on your computer to hear and see Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, not just by title, but by function and by content.
And if you didn't get that information, I'll repeat it again at the end of the show.
Yes, sir.
Brother Jamil, let me start on this subject with the minister. We want to, at the end, in the second half of the show, on these 52 weeks, we want to start a dialogue on some of the talking points that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has made during the volumes as they go through. The first thing I would like to ask you about, he laid and talked about the base of the subject matter, the time and what must be done. And he said the theme and the base of what he's talking about comes from the 103rd Surah, the time, in which it says, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, by the time, surely man is in loss except those who believe and do good and exhort one another to truth and exhort one another to patience. Can you elaborate further on this Surah 103?
I'm going to throw that question to the callers, but I'm going to preface their answers in the dialogue that we hope to have with those who are calling in on the line and in queue. I'm going to ask that we understand that we really don't need to give context, brother. And I'm not telling you how to run your radio show, nor am I trying to make it boring, but I want to say this to you. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is qualified, capable, and more than able to represent himself with that context. I would do a great disservice to myself, to your audience, to you, to your program, and to Minister Farrakhan, attempting to set a context. But I will say this as an individual believer, not attempting to represent any body, organization, name, group, not even the Nation of Islam, not even speaking as a student minister. I'm just talking about me as a brother. Do you know what, Brother Jihad? if I didn't have Islam, I would have long since been dead. I would have been physically dead, succumbing to either the temptations of the world that Brother Professor Griff talked about in his closing comment, or I would have been dead from the depression and the anger and the low-lying fever and inflammation and stress that would have come to me, which has come to me, but which I deal with now because I got Islam. But when you're angry over the condition of black people in America and you're frustrated about the eventuality of a solution, you end up dying early and dying young and systematically ill and sick. But I thank Allah for the healing, life-giving teaching of the Honorable Mr. Elijah Muhammad and his minister, Louis Farrakhan. Now, that teaching, Brother Jihad, actually informs us, and the time says to us, Surat al-Asr, the time, by the time, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, it reads, by the time, surely man is in loss, except those who believe and do good, and exhort one another to truth, and exhort one another to patience.
Right.
It starts off reminding us that man is generally in loss. And if you look at the world today, the world is in loss. People are losing their money, losing their homes, losing their cars, losing their family, losing their minds. This is a world in loss. Then the book comes right back, Al-Kitab, Al-Quran comes right back. It says, except those who believe. That means there's a message present that's being submitted for our consideration, and whether we believe or not is up to us. Tonight, listener, it's up to you whether you decide to believe in the word coming from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan or not. But I say it to you simple and straightforward. Accept Islam and live. Reject it and surely die.
Yes. You're out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. Yes, sir. And any questions, Brother Byrne? Does anybody else in queue that want to talk to Brother Jamil?
Well, I'm hanging
no
up here.
No hands raised at the moment. We had someone, but they disappeared. Hopefully they'll come
they
back.
They disappeared? Well, hopefully they'll come right back.
All right, call me back. I'm out of here. I'm gone.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I by no means, brother, would ask you to qualify anything the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said, but he has asked us. He has asked us to take his volumes and make them talking points, and let's go through and have the dialogue. So that's basically all. That's basically all I'm trying to do with this, because this is going to be a 52-week series, and sometimes you think you heard a thing, and you really didn't, you know. So there's some questions that I have about some of the things that talking points that he raised, and one of them was he said that the time will determine whether we lose, whether we win, whether we live or whether we die.
That's right.
Whether we suffer privation or whether we grow in prosperity, it all depends on what we do with the knowledge of the time.
That's correct.
Now, there's a lot in that, Brother Jamil. There's a lot in that that he had talked about. I just want to say to all of those who are out there tonight, call in. Talk to Brother Jamil tonight. This subject, one of the things of concern is that why now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has chosen this hour to have this subject. You know, there's so much that we can talk about with this. Yes, sir.
One of the things that made me think about that, and I did entertain that question, I did not have an opportunity as of yet to ask the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan why now and why the subject, and to thank, well, I have had a chance to communicate with him and thank him for the subject, but not yet to ask why. But I think when I reflect back on it, I think back to January the 2nd, 2011, and Minister Farrakhan was a guest on a radio program in New York on KISS 98.7.
Okay.
On the radio program that's hosted by two of our great jurists, judges,
lawyer, along with our brother James Ntume from the world of music and culture. And there on the program, there were some brothers in Newark who were putting together a program to try and reclaim the streets from violence and crime in that city. And since 98.7 covers New York and New Jersey all, Minister Farrakhan was a guest on the radio program, and they asked him, "Brother Minister, what can we do to reclaim our streets from the violence that our youth have fallen victim to?" And the minister he said, "I'm going to be very honest with you. There's very little you can do. The time is almost completely up, and you are running out of time. Black people have rejected the teaching of God and the greatest teachers who have ever come among any people on earth, and yet you have consciously chosen to turn your back on them. So God is justified in chastising you and making true the word he promised you in the scripture. If you reject," he says in the Quran, "lo, my chastisement was severe, and I seized them with a great affliction when they expected it not. The Bible says that he would give you blood to drink, your own sweet blood, because you rejected Islam, you rejected truth, you rejected the message of life. So then drink your own blood, because now you tasted it, you've earned it. There'll be blood," he said, "flowing in the streets as high as a horse's bridle." He said to the listeners, "I don't know what you can do to avoid it. We'll keep working up to the last minute, but your time is winding up, and you will have a price to pay for rejecting the word of Allah's messenger."
Mm-hmm.
He said that and was cold, straight to the point. Right after he said it, the host said, "We'll be back after these messages."
Yes, sir, I remember that.
There's nothing else he could say, because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was bringing the truth so direct, so straight, and so true. What I'm saying is that the reason why I think the minister, and one of the reasons why the minister may be doing this at this time, is because he is on his job. He promised the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he promised the FOI, and he promised Allah in the presence of all those who were in attendance. When he first got his ex and came into the FOI in 1955 in New York City, he said, "I promise to take this teaching, this Islam, to every hillside and every valley, every nook and every cranny, every highway and every byway, throughout the hells and wilderness of North America, to seek and to save my people with the means of Islam." I'm paraphrasing what he said, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
Minister Farrakhan is on his job now, all these years later, 58 years later, he's still on his job. He's still, at the age of 80 years old, traversing America and the world, working a grueling schedule that leaves men half his age gasping and panting for breath. But Minister Farrakhan goes on. And now he embarks on a 52-week-long, intensively spiritual and intellectual and academic and scholastic lecture series to teach and train his people to raise us up out of the grave of ignorance by Allah's permission, to fashion us into the form of a bird and then breathe life into us so that by Allah's permission we become a living nation. Who could ask for a leader better than that? Who could ask for a man that loves you more than that? And he'll go out of his way to teach you at age 80. He don't even stop. What the hell do we have as an excuse that we won't get up and pray? We won't think. We won't treat each other right. We won't treat each other kind. We're mean and nasty to each other in the brotherhood, in the sisterhood. Some of us mean and nasty in our own house. Get up in the morning and tell your mother and father, "Pass the Cheerios." And they tell you, "Damn it, grab the milk yourself." We're just mean and ugly and terrible, and yet the man of God continues to work on our behalf and in our interest. We owe him our support. We owe him the $10 million that he's trying to raise. We should make it 20. We should tell him, "Brother Minister Farrakhan, I know this ain't poker, but I see your $10 million, and I raise your $10 million. I'm all in for $20 million.
Yes,
why
sir.
Not?
miracle,
yes,
and
sir.
He helped the minister. But I don't like this old, this new way we have. Apparently, we done got so hip and slick and bourgeois with our Islam that we not fired up no more. I remember we used to be fired up. You know how I used to be.
Yes,
Saturday
brother.
Morning when we come to FY class on Eastern Parkway at 1110.
Come on.
Parkway.
Come on.
At the corner of Utica Avenue in Brooklyn, New York.
Teach on that.
When we were coming to FOI class, brother, there'd be nearly 2,000 soldiers in there.
On fire. That's right.
On fire with the spirit of Allah, working with our brother Abdul Karim Muhammad. The
absolute
representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan, fanning
yes.
out to the of New York, Newark, Yonkers, all over in the metropolitan area, down in Jersey City, over in Plainfield, in every borough of New York, pushing the program.
That's
our
right.
boots were on the ground.
On the ground.
Why not put your boots back on the ground? You old ones, you're not too old to get out there and push this program.
That's right.
I'll be damned if I'm a used to be.
Come on.
No, brother. Now, I'm not no used to be. Uh-uh. I'm still being. I'm
That's
still
right.
being. And what I'm doing, and I'm trying my best to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan from wherever I am to do whatever I can to assist him in this mission for which we have been called, Brother Jihad, and which we have given our lives to. It's put up or shut up time.
All praise is due to Allah. We're out on the front line tonight with the Fruit of Islam, with our brother, friend, Brother Jamil Muhammad. Brother Vernon, do we have anybody that would like to talk to our brother with a question or a comment?
No hands raised.
No hands raised.
Brother, just start pushing some buttons and make some people go.
Make them come on the line.
They give people a complex. It's something else, you know. And then the people be saying, you know, nobody come around and teach no Islam. They don't make themselves available to the believer. Yeah, you're available right now. But you won't say nothing. I don't want to say nothing. I just don't want to listen. Hush. Just come on and say something to your brothers. I don't care if you pick up the phone and say, hey, everybody, how y'all doing? We love y'all from up here in Rochester, Minnesota. Springfield, Massachusetts is on the line. It might even be somebody on there from Baton Rouge. You never know. Baton Rouge, they might do something down there. But, you know, there's somebody everywhere that knows this teaching is true. And even if you just raise your hand up and say, I bear witness. I want to testify.
I bear witness, Brother
Jimmy. There she go.
Somebody want to testify. That's
your little sister, Gideon Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am. Sister, how are you? Praise be to Allah.
How are you, sir?
I thank Allah for every day above ground, since I feel good by Allah's grace, and what ain't right gonna get right. So I thank Allah for making it right in advance. You know.
Well, brother, I want to thank you for joining us again and again and again, in all ways, delivering such a powerful and beautiful message, Brother Jamil. And Brother Jamil, to the listening audience and to Brother Jihad and Brother Vernon, I think y'all have experienced this with him. He is so modest. But every time I get you on the show, I'm going to always remind you that we thank Allah for you, brother, and it's all right. It's all right to come out and take a bow. So, sir, thank you for your service.
That's right.
Thank you for your knowledge, your wisdom, and your love. And I just love you so much, and I just want to tell you that, and I'm out.
Sister Gidja, before you go, Sister Gidja, can you tell us what's going on for Thursday?
Yes, Thursday we're having Closing the Gap Between the Black Man and Black Woman, Part 1. We have Brother Brian, Brother Leon, and Brother Michael Sinomatic Muhammad. And the brothers are going to talk about things that brothers should do to close that gap. And we're going to be followed next Thursday by Part 2 when the mighty MGT step up front and center and say what they're committed to do to close that gap as well.
Wait a minute. I thought,
wait a minute now, sister, I thought that the MGT was perfect in every way and that the brothers had to do all the work and the sister
and then you woke up. Right? And then you woke up.
Oh man. Thank you, Sister Gidget. I appreciate that. That's on Thursday at 8 o'clock Central Time, right?
Yes, sir. And on Friday, we have Minister James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida.
Beautiful.
He's debuting his first show on the Nation Building Network on Friday. And on Saturday, this is the third show for Young, Gifted, and Black, where all of the Nation of Islam hip-hop artists gather together to do their conscious, positive thing. They do spoken word. They do rap. We have K. Reno, Problem 13, D.A. Smart. I can't name them all. Brother
okay.
Arvin's out of Chicago, Illinois. Brother Edmund, Sister Connie, so many beautiful, beautiful, beautiful youngsters. I call them youngsters, and they come on and they do their thing every Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock Saturday night. Okay, okay. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you, sis. I appreciate that. And that's Saturday night. Okay, and this is every Saturday.
Every Saturday, we are on 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday.
Okay. Beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, beloved.
Brother, can tell you what we got coming up Sunday.
Come on, Brother Vernon.
Yes, indeed. Back from the underworld. We are coming back with the No Romance Without Finance show. I was missing in action last week. I was down in the depths. I've been in the belly of the beast for 3 days, but I have to return.
All right. Beautiful.
If that's
Sunday.
If I'd have known you was there, I'd have put something on your books, but I didn't know you was down. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate the sentiment, brother.
What time is the show, Brother Vernon?
The show on Sunday is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 6:30 p.m. Central. We're talking about economics, we're talking about finance and personal business.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you, sir. Brother Jamil, I'm going to get you out with this one question here, if you don't mind. What are some of the things that we can do in order to escape the time and the hour that we live in?
That's not a hard question, brother. We have to just obey. It may not be easy, but it is simple. Obey God. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan asked us the question, what is the right religion with Allah? It is to obey God. When you distill down the message of Islam and the prophets, and when you combine the best of the hadith and the sunnah, the reliable reports from Bukhari and all the other compilers of hadith, Sahih Muslim, all of them, what's the bottom line? Obey God. When you add up all of the Old Testament writers from the five books of law, then on through the history books and the recordings of the works of the major and minor prophets, what is the bottom line? Obey God. When Jesus was traveling around Galilee and Nazareth and Bethlehem and Judea and over into Jerusalem, when he did those travels, what do you think the core content of his message was? Two words, obey God. It ain't
beautiful.
Hard to do. It ain't hard to understand. The plan of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan is to tell the black man and woman there's a way out of the hell that the slave masters tried to put you in, and it is to obey God. You can't black
beautiful.
Your way out of hell. You can't black your way into heaven. You're not going to be able to get to the doors of paradise and throw up a fist and represent a red, black, and green moon to Africa necklace around your neck. Rake your boat, your beret at a jazzy angle and dip on into the paradise because you black. That's not how it goes. What's required is that we obey God. So today,
now,
to myself, to my friends, to everyone, let's start by and continue to obey God.
Beautiful. Brother Jamil, I thought that was the last question. I just received a text. And we have a sister who's online who's listening. She's not a member of the Nation of Islam. She says that she is contemplating divorce and counseling has not helped. She says she is listening and wants some advice. Can you speak to that real quick and probably give that information back out where they can contact the Wedded Bliss? Yes, sir. Go right ahead, sir.
Don't know what city the sister is in. We're on our way to Atlanta. We have some, that'll be in the springtime. We have some other things that are happening in other cities. We'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio, next month on the 16th of February, inshallah. We're moving around, of course, in the Washington, D.C. area, Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York. Look for us in these various different areas. And we're even getting some nibbles on the end of the hook from Los Angeles and parts of the western region as well. So, yeah, there'll be times when we're traveling. But if the sister, I don't know the details, but I will say this. I join all of us at the Nation Building Network, and I join all of us at Boots on the Ground, on the front line with the FOI, in praying for you and the successful solutions to your problems in your union. Before you let go of your husband and before he lets go of your precious hand, we ask Allah that you expend and explore every possible solution to your problems, but that those solutions be focused on and centered in the Word of God, that if you find in that Word the way to address your problems, I don't care if it's from 1 Corinthians chapter 13 on the nature of love, I don't care if it's from Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10 through 31, talking about the virtuous woman and her price is far above rubies. I don't care if it's from 2 Peter and 2 Timothy's description of a righteous man of God and a bishop in the church and what a man is supposed to look like in Christianity. I don't care if it's from Surah 4 in the Holy Quran, that men are the maintainers of women, or from Surah 66, which details the ideal characteristics of a woman of God as a wife to a man of God. Wherever it is, find God's word. And don't just tap it and run away. Don't just grab it and use it to beat your spouse over the head. Try to imbibe it and make it a part of who you are. And understand that your spouse is with you and you are with him. And unless you are together, you cannot make progress. If you're attacking him and he's attacking you, you cannot move forward together to repel the attack of Satan's world. But my dear sister, I don't know the details, but you get in God's word and stay on your knees, prayerful and prayerful and prayerful some more. You know, everything in God's warehouse is available to you, but it's all on the lower shelf. You can't even reach what God has for you until you get down on your knees in prayer.
Beautiful.
And when you're down on your knees, you know, it's hard to stumble when you're on your knees. So you're standing up too much maybe, huh? And fighting your spouse a little bit too much maybe, and him arguing with you and you arguing with him. But if you just slow down and say, baby, let's straighten it out.
I got one more for you, Brother Jamil.
Before you go, let me just tell my sister the number. You call us, sister, at 202-696-5150. 202-696-5150. Call us and let us know what you need. And if we can respond to you, we will. And we'll make sure that we do all that we can to save your union, or make sure that we save you as a holistic individual, and let's move forward in the way of God. I thank you for your question, my sister.
Brother Jamil, you got one in queue, 678-900. Brother Vernon, you
go
see
ahead.
678. Go right ahead, 678.
Atlanta. Go ahead, Atlanta.
678-900, what say you?
Call up in 678. Your microphone is open.
Okay. They must be in the city. That's Atlanta.
There he goes. Go ahead, 678.
It's Brother Naeem from Atlanta. I thank you very much for your diligence and your wisdom.
Thank you, Brother Naeem, for your call. Thank you so very much. May Allah bless you, brother, and look forward to seeing you soon, inshallah.
Yes, sir.
No brother worries. Vern, you got you, well, alaykum salam, sir. Thanks for call, for your call, Brother Naeem. You got one more in, Brother Vernon, that we can get real quick?
One more from area code 314.
314. What say you, 314?
Come on, St. Louis. Come on, St. Louis.
Assalamu alaikum.
Hey, well, alaykum salam, 314. Is that St. Louis?
Yes,
sir. All praise is due to Allah. Good to hear from you, sir.
Yes, sir. I just want to thank Brother Jamil for coming on. Brother, I'm a young Muslim coming through the ranks, and this is another FOI class for me this week.
Praise to Allah.
You have the blessing of being in one of the best mosques in the nation. Keep it up. Stay with number 28 and help keep making that mosque a great place for Islam to be heard and practiced here in the hells of North America. What's your name, brother?
Brother Gene S, sir.
Brother Gene, G-E-N-E?
G-E-N-E, S. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We're going to be looking for you, Brother Gene. You got a great name there in the history of the nation. We're going to be looking for you. Come on up to Savior there. I want to shake your hand. But you buying the coffee because you're too young for me to treat you.
Yes, sir.
All
yes,
prayer.
Well, come to meet you.
Thank you, Brother Gene, for your call. That's our show for tonight. Thank you, Brother Minister Jamil, Student Minister Jamil Muhammad. We want to thank him for being our guest tonight. We want to thank our Brother Professor Griff from Public Enemy for being in the house tonight. We couldn't catch up with Chief Magistrate Court Justice Maurice Muhammad. He's detained in the meeting he had, but maybe next week, God willing. Don't forget, tune in this Saturday at 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speak on the time and what must be done, Volume 2. That's at 6 o'clock Central Time, and the website is www.noi.org. That's this Saturday at 6 o'clock Central Time. And on Sunday, tune in to the Nation of Islam webcast. Again, www.noi.org. On Twitter, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said these words, and I quote, "If we start focusing on each other's faults, it blinds us to the best part of one another." All praise is due to Allah. To help the Nation of Islam with raising $10 million to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan purchase land and help our people to do for self, just go to www.noi.org and go to the area on your screen that talks about donations. Help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to help ourselves. If you're in Atlanta, just stop by Muhammad's Mosque number 15 at 3642 Hamilton Road and hear a good lecture from my student minister down here in Atlanta, Georgia, student minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad. To all you soldiers, I want to give a shout out to all these little small cities in these states. Long way, we coming to you next week. We know you out there with your boots on the ground. We love you, soldiers. Shout out to Washington State, Portland, Oregon. Shout out to South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland. Huh? Shout out to come on, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, where you at? New Orleans, where you at? We love you, soldiers. We ain't forgetting you. Let's keep our boots on the ground. We got 5 more weeks to go. Let's push it. Savior's Day is here. We love you, dear Apostle, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Original salute to our Supreme Captain Mustafa Farrakhan. May Allah bless us all. See you next week, God willing. Happy Savior's Day. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.